Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome back into More Outdoors. Don't forget we have a text message board. If you'd like to send us a text, questions, comments, suggestions, we'd love to hear from you at 870-870. Comes here into the studio real time. This segment, we turn our thoughts to the Gulf Council, the Gulf of Mexico Council, and joining us to talk about their recent meeting, what was discussed, what the outcome was, and what this will mean to you as an offshore fisherman in the state of Louisiana is Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries Assistant Secretary Patrick Banks. Patrick, thanks for taking the time to get with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Don. Good morning, everybody.
Tell us, first of all, about the Gulf Council. What is their makeup, who's on it, and what is their responsibility?
Well, it's a 17-member board that is made up from representatives of all the Gulf states. The head of the state fisheries management agency is for each state is one member from each state, and then there's typically a recreational representative and a commercial representative from the general public, who is also on the council for each state. And then the final member is made up by the head of the Southeast region for the NOAA Fisheries Agency, which is the federal agency. So that's the typical makeup. Right now, Florida has 4 seats. The rest of the Gulf states has 3 total seats each. And then we have the federal representative. And that body is charged with developing rules and regulations to manage the federal fishery species off of our coasts.
So they are the top agency, so to speak. In other words, they do not come under any direction from NOAA or National Marine Fisheries Service other than what they do within their own halls and their own meetings, correct?
Well, not entirely. They do develop the rules and regulations, and then those rules and regulations ultimately have to be approved by the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, which is the head of NOAA, it's the agency that, under which NOAA falls. And so there is some oversight from NOAA and from the U.S. Department of Commerce, but typically the Secretary of Commerce codifies what is passed through the Gulf Council. They publish those rules, and they become federal law.
So this latest meeting that you attended, what was the order of business there?
Well, it was largely a informational-only meeting. There was not a lot of final action taken on any one particular thing, but we did get some very interesting information on a variety of fronts. I'd say most notably that will be of interest to the anglers is that it appears that we will have a spring season opening up for greater amberjack for the private sector. So there was quite a bit of fishing in this past fall portion of the season, but the quota was not caught, and so NOAA is going to be able to reopen the season probably May the 1st to private recreational angling for greater amberjack off of our coasts. So that was good news for all of us to hear.
That is. So I guess what does this mean as far as being in conjunction with or at least giving something to target when snappers close? What was discussed as far as snapper season?
Well, that's a good question. The season structure for greater amberjack does not follow the same season structure in general for red snapper. And obviously red snapper now is in the control of each of the states as to when to open the season. But greater amberjack, the season structure actually starts in August, and then it ends the following July. And it's typically open August, September, October, and then if there's enough quotas, typically reopened in May of the following year within that season structure. So we will have an opportunity, or our anglers will have an opportunity to catch greater amberjack during the May portion of the season, but it will likely be closed by the time we're able to open red snapper. Now, that's not an absolute assurance, but so there may be a few days of overlap there, but we do think that the greater amberjack will then reopen towards the end of our red snapper season. So I think we're going to have some opportunity to catch both of those species within the legal framework, but we'll just have to see how those seasons and those catch rates play out.
Right. So how does this play in with state water seasons versus federal? The state has the option in its own state waters to set seasons based on what?
Well, we certainly have the authority to set seasons within our own state waters. So our commission certainly could set a season for anything it wanted to within our state waters. However, except for the case of red snapper, where we have got a state management in place, we typically follow the concurrent regulations that are going on in federal waters so that there's not a discrepancy. Now, greater amberjack, I think, is another opportunity for us at the Gulf Council level to try to achieve state management. We've proven that it works in the red snapper fishery. I think that it can work in the greater amberjack fishery as well. But it will be, of course, some heavy lifting at the Gulf Council level, just like red snapper was over the course of several years. But from a greater amberjack standpoint, we tend to have the same concurrent season in state waters as we do in federal water, simply because greater amberjack in state waters are just not all that common like red snapper is.
Right. I'm looking at season length in days among the five Gulf states, and we seem to have the longest number of days in Louisiana with 109, but yet we're about third as far as the total poundage that are allocated to us. So how does that happen? Do they have bigger limits?
Well, no. Of course, Florida has the largest portion of the overall Gulf quota, and that simply is based on historical landings, and that's how that got parsed out. They have by far the largest amount of effort out of Florida and have the ability to catch the most fish very quickly. So they had a very short season, and that's simply because they have a lot of anglers going out, and they can catch a lot of fish very quickly. We had the longest season simply because, well, for a couple of reasons. One, we're able to count the fish through our quill program very accurately, and so we know almost to the fish how much is being caught. And our anglers, we just don't have as many anglers in Louisiana as they do in a place like Florida or Alabama. And so it takes a while for our poundage to be caught up. And so we were able to stay open for 109 days this year, which is really, really great. And we're certainly hoping we can do that again this coming season.
Yeah, so it's based on the number of anglers out there putting the pressure on how many days you get. The fewer anglers, it takes longer to catch your quota. I see where Alabama reached 98.4%, Mississippi was 99.1%, and we were at 103.9%, and Texas was at 98.3%. Florida, less than 75. Are they not using similar to what we have at Lock Reel to account for theirs?
Well, they have a survey design that they use. Certainly, Lock Reel is the, I would say, the gold standard in terms of how precise of a catch estimate we can achieve, and theirs is just not as good. And so they ended up with about 75%. Part of the reason for that is they still have such a long delay between the time that the fish is caught and when their survey is able to actually count that fish. And so, unlike Lock Reel, they're not able to close and open very quickly because it takes such a delay to get their numbers in. So by the time they thought they were at their limit and they closed, and by the time they got their final numbers in, it showed it was 75%, and it was too late for them to reopen to try to catch up more fish. Mm-hmm. That's one of the design advantages of LaCreel, and what makes it so great is the quick response rate that it has.
Right. And LaCreel was developed in Louisiana. We can take credit for that. I'm assuming Alabama, Mississippi, and Texas use a similar program to get their county?
No, not at all. Alabama and Mississippi have mandatory electronic reporting for their private recreational anglers, and so theirs is almost like a census tally rather than a survey tally like ours is. And Texas has a design that was developed many, many years ago that has to do with counting boats and counting boat trailers at popular fishing spots to try to understand effort. It's a design that's not similar at all to LaCreel. And so we've got a different method of counting the fish, but we in Louisiana have received full certification and calibration from the feds as a comparable system to what the feds have. The other states are still working through that approval process.
Mm-hmm. Did Red Drum offshore come up at all in the meeting? I know that's been discussed before, trying to bring back maybe some fish to harvest in the Gulf offshore waters, which enjoy game fish status right now.
Yes, it certainly did. We discussed some management criteria for Red Drum, but the bottom line is we still do not have enough data from those big, from that portion of the population that lives offshore, those big spawning aggregation of bull reds. We just don't have enough population level data from that segment of the population to do a full stock assessment. The last full stock assessment was done in the 1980s, and so without that stock assessment, it's tough to change those regulations. So the recommendation from the council was to maintain the optimum yield from that population at zero retention from the federal waters. So assuming that NOAA and the Secretary of Commerce agree, then redfish will still enjoy that game status and that protection in federal waters for the foreseeable future. But it certainly would be nice to have a full stock assessment for redfish for a variety of reasons, but one so that we understand how healthy that stock is.
As far as lemonfish, cobia, there's been a lot of talk about that. A lot of people are very concerned that there's going to be some serious cuts and less cobia being able to be taken, which is a very popular fish in our waters. What was discussed with regard to cobia?
Well, that wasn't a tremendous amount of discussion, but you're exactly right. It does appear that we may be headed for some additional regulations at some point on cobia. One of the things that the council is having difficulty with is the differences in opinions among the states. We have not heard very much in Louisiana that there's a problem with cobia. However, we hear a lot of public testimony from the Florida anglers that they don't see cobia along their beaches in the spring like they used to. Same thing in Alabama. So, we had spent some time trying to gather more information on cobia to try to determine which way we needed to go. Again, it's a difficult topic to grapple with, especially here in Louisiana, because we just don't see the problem with cobia that they seem to be having in other states. And so we're not at the point where additional regulations are happening yet, but there continues to be talk, because what we're hearing from some of the anglers in the Gulf is there are problems with cobia and something needs to be done. So that will continue to be discussed. But for now, cobia remains the same.
Very good. Patrick, we're going to take a break. We come back, if you would, maybe just kind of give an overview of what fishermen can expect as far as regulations on offshore fishing, including the amberjack, the red snapper, cobia, or any others that have been discussed there. And I know a lot of people make plans, their vacations, that some people determine whether they're going to buy a new boat, and all of this is hinged on the information on what's going to be available to fish for in the Gulf. So as precisely an estimate you can give, we'd really appreciate that. We'll be right back with Assistant Secretary of Louisiana Wildlife and Fisheries, Patrick Banks. If you got a question or a comment, 870-870 is the best way. Text it to us, or if you can give us a call, it's 504-260-6368. And we're wrapping up our conversation with Assistant Secretary, Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, Patrick Banks, who recently attended the Gulf Council meeting. A number of items were discussed. And Patrick, if you would, and I mean, we can't hold you to this, but basically looking at the numbers of the estimates and the landings, and can you tell fishermen if you would suspect that any increases in the total allocation will be granted, or possibly we'll see any changes in the daily creel or size limit or the number of fishing days compared to last year for, I guess, what you'd say the main three, amberjack, red snapper, cobia, and maybe even sharks? We haven't even talked about sharks if that was discussed.
Well, I guess let's start with the main species, and that's red snapper. I don't see any changes to the red snapper scenario for this coming year, which is certainly a good thing. I think we've enjoyed the last two seasons of very good fishing, very good opportunity for the anglers. And we will be entering into the very first year of our official state management of red snapper. And so we will be going in front of our Wildlife and Fisheries Commission sometime in the next couple of months to actually set that season. And I would expect that our recommendation to the commission, of course, it's the commission's decision, but our recommendation would likely be to open that weekend of Memorial Day and run that season through the summer as long as our quota can hold out. And I think that the two fish per person per day works well to give us the most days of opportunity, but certainly it's up to the commission. If they decide that they want to change those daily creels, then they certainly can do that as long as we stay our season within quota. In terms of amberjack, I think that those will likely stay the same. Like I mentioned earlier, we will NOAA fisheries will reopen that season in May. And so there is a possibility that we get a day or two of overlap with the start of red snapper season towards the end of May this year. And then the federal season will close at the end of May and then reopen August 1st. So there's another good opportunity for overlap of seasons of red snapper and greater amberjack towards the end of the summer. So those are the two big ones in my mind. Cobia, I don't see any changes to the regulations there, but at least for this season. But I do know that it continues to be discussed at Gulf Council level. And then sharks, wow, that's a big topic. I know a lot of anglers are concerned about the number of sharks out there and what it's doing to both recreational and commercial fishing. I guess what we have to remember is that we're seeing a lot more sharks because the management measures that have been taken and the under the tenets of Magnuson-Stevens largely have worked, and we're seeing an increase in population of sharks. So a lot of these species of sharks that were on the decline have rebounded, and that's really why we're seeing more sharks. So from an ecological standpoint, I think it's a good thing, but certainly from a competition standpoint with our anglers, it's a little bit difficult.
Do you see any parallels with sharks that we saw with the red snapper, where when the feds were managing it, there was an obvious gap there between what was really there and what was being allowed to be caught? Do you think there's a similar situation existing with sharks? Is the inventorying of the species as accurate as it could be, or might there be a better method?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the inventorying of all the fishery species is the same depending on where you are in the Gulf. Certainly, we're able to count sharks through our LaCreel program, and we do. So I think the counting is better these days with all of these different state systems, such as LaCreel. And I'm not so sure that there's a discrepancy between what is out there and what we're allowed to harvest. I think that the Gulf Council knows full well that we have a lot more sharks these days. But similar to snapper, just because you have a lot of fish doesn't mean that it's a good idea to catch a lot at that same time. Think of it like your pine plantation forest that you just planted, and you've got a tremendous amount of small 2 to 3 to 4 year old trees, and there's a lot of them, but you don't really need to start harvesting those until they get quite a bit bigger. So I think the same thing goes for some of those species of sharks. We need to get that population back strong and healthy before some additional tape can be allowed. But I think in terms of counting the sharks, I think the systems are very good because of great programs like the creel. We have a good handle on what is being harvested.
Mm-hmm. And what about getting back to the amberjack size or creel limit changes? Would you suspect any of that?
Not this year, no, sir. I think everything's going to stay the same. I think, the good news for amberjack is we're going to have a May season, and we'll likely have some, when it reopens in the fall, we'll have some days where they can catch both snapper and amberjack is the likely scenario.
Got it. Patrick, thanks so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. Anything else before we go you'd like to get out there to the public with regard to the council on the offshore fishery?
Well, not on offshore, but inshore. I just want to remind some of our avid inshore fishermen that we are starting our rounds of public comment meetings for speckled trout regulations. The first meeting will be Monday in Gray, Louisiana, which is near Houma at the North Branch Library. And so the second meeting will be in Baton Rouge on Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. So please try to make it out and visit with us and give us your ideas on speckled trout and speckled trout management. It's a very important issue, I know, to a lot of people as it is to us, and we appreciate all the public's involvement.
Very good. Patrick, always a pleasure. Look forward to our next visit. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All righty. Patrick Banks, Assistant Secretary of Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. And, yeah, I want to reiterate what he stated about the speckled trout meetings. Very, very important, because I know a lot of you have opinions about that. And what generally happens is when regulations are changed and someone's not happy with the change, and ask them, well, did you go out there? Did you voice your opinion? Did you send an email to the commissioners? No, I just griped about it on Facebook. Well, that's not a way to get involved in fishery or game management, is griping on social media. Emailing directly to the commissioners, going there in person and speaking, having your comments heard and recorded, that's the way to do it. I don't think this is going to be like a lot of issues where they get very light turnouts. I'm really counting on the speckled trout and saltwater fishermen to really turn out at these events. Well, that's going to wrap it up. We got a little bit of a shortened show this morning. That's so I can get my skipper costume on and get on over to the crew of Bilge and Slidell. If you're going to be around there, it starts at noon. Come on by and holler at me, and I'll try to hit you with one of those 3,000 Deadly Dudley fishing baits we got. And I'll see you again next week right back here. By the way, I think I'm filling in for Newell Norman on Friday from what time's he come on? 10 to 1. Yeah, 10 to 1. We'll be probably talking things other than fishing and hunting, but you never know. See you then.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.